Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia ruled that the Drug Enforcement Agency does not have to reconsider its designation of marijuana as a Schedule I drug. Schedule I is the most restrictive category for controlled substances. It includes drugs that have a higher potential for abuse, no currently accepted medical use, and a lack of accepted safety for use under medical supervision. The classification is being challenged by a coalition of medical marijuana advocacy organizations and individual patients. Since 1996, 17 states and the District of Columbia have passed legislation or ballot initiatives legalizing the use of medical marijuana, but the DEA continues to treat it as a dangerous drug on a par with heroin. Tamar Todd, senior staff attorney with the Drug Policy Alliance, says yesterday's court ruling maintains that status quo,
which is that the DEA has scheduled marijuana as Schedule I controlled substance and has continued over the past many years to obstruct research on marijuana and any medicinal value or other value that marijuana may have. The petitioners brought this case to challenge the classification by the DEA by presenting peer-reviewed scientific research showing that the Schedule I was inappropriate for marijuana. But the D.C. Court of Appeals found that the DEA followed its own rules that it's created for evaluating how to schedule controlled substances, and that it followed those rules in this instance, and therefore it wasn't going to return the case to the DEA to have additional hearings or additional fact-finding, and wasn't going to require the DEA to reschedule marijuana.
The DEA has only licensed one location, one facility to produce marijuana that can be used for medical testing, and that's in Mississippi. Have they allowed testing to go forward with anything produced there?
That's sort of the crux of the problem. It's that in theory, there should be a process by which research applications can be approved, testing can take place, and studies can move forward. But the agency has proven itself very, very skilled at obstructing any of that from actually happening. So you're correct in saying that the National Institute on Drug Abuse, through the DEA, has a monopoly on the supply of marijuana that can be legally used in any federally approved research. So researchers have succeeded in getting projects approved and proposed research approved through the Food and Drug Administration, but then they've been unable to get the DEA to agree to give them the supply for research. There's the additional problem that supply of marijuana that NIDA has, many believe, is not of sufficient quality for research. It has low concentrations of THC. It's missing other cannabinoids that have therapeutic value. And it's often freeze-dried and years old, and it's not of the quality that researchers would need. So even though they've had approval for the research project, the DEA won't give them approval to access the supply. They have a monopoly on supply, which is unlike other Schedule I drugs, where there's no monopoly and they can be obtained from different sources. And then even if they were to get through that hurdle, the supply is not of sufficient quality for good quality research to go forward. And there's a number of research studies that are just hung up in the process where they've achieved approval by the FDA, approval for their project to go forward, but they're in this holding pattern trying to get access to the supply. One thing that's frustrating about the decision yesterday, and is also not surprising, is that agencies get a tremendous amount of deference in how they create rules and how they carry out the responsibilities that have been given to them, and the courts have to give them deference, and basically, unless the court finds they're acting completely arbitrary and capricious with no basis, then the court would intervene. The DEA is highly skilled at having created a completely inefficient and basically unscientific system for moving forward. It's motivated by wanting to keep marijuana Schedule I, and it's figured out a way basically to create agency inefficiency in order to maintain that goal without ever having to address the actual science.
What is the impact on the risk to medical marijuana facilities and medical marijuana patients?
Well, the interesting thing about the federal government's intransigence on this issue and the fact that they've had their head in the sand and kept their head in the sand is that the states and the people have decided not to wait, right? I mean, they've moved forward. They've said, we've looked at the science. It's obvious that people benefit from it. We know from people's personal experience that people benefit from it, and it's helping them. The DEA is never going to move. The federal government's never going to change. So we're going to just allow it under state law. So all the state programs and the one in the District of Columbia don't require doctors to prescribe marijuana. And the reason why they don't require them to prescribe it is in order to avoid the DEA and the DEA's interference. They're not waiting for approval of the DEA for any scientifically approved studies. It's a continuing struggle in terms of how much those states can regulate and how well they can provide access because of the continued federal obstruction. So the more federal obstruction and interference there is, the less ability those states have to regulate and provide their own quality assurance and their own testing and their own evaluation, things like that. But even with the interference, the programs are still moving forward and it's still legal for patients under state law. So they will access the medicine, and in some cases, patients and caregivers will produce it themselves. So since those laws were designed around a DEA that is not budging on this issue and is likely to interfere with this issue, I don't think this decision is going to impact those laws or how they're implemented or how they continue to function.
Is this the end of the line for this? Is there an appeal? Obviously, there's the Supreme Court, but is this likely to go there?
I think the first step is that the petitioners will probably seek an en banc hearing in the circuit court in which they'll ask for the full court to decide the issue. There was also an issue of standing in the case as to whether the petitioners could even bring the case at all. And so that's also a question that there could be en banc review on, about whether there was standing. And then on the merits, and then if that's granted, there would be another hearing in front of the full court instead of a 3-judge panel. And then following that, there could be an appeal to the Supreme Court. I would think that it would be unlikely that the Supreme Court would hear a case like this because it has to do with the agency deference and it doesn't have to do with the split in interpretation of the various circuits. So it's likely that this is going to be the final word in this case. However, I do think that as these cases mount and as public opinion evolves and the federal government continues to insist on something that nobody believes, it's just another example of how out of touch the federal government, the DEA, is on this issue. And it's going to help underscore that point and build momentum by the states and by the people through public opinion to eventually force a federal change.
Tamar Todd is a senior staff attorney with the Drug Policy Alliance. And that's some of the news for Wednesday, January 23rd, 2013. The news was produced in New York with Jose Santiago and Linda Perry. I'm Andrea Sears in New York for the WBAI, listener-supported news.
This is WBAI in New York, broadcasting at 99.5 megahertz FM. My name is Robert Knight, inviting you to stay tuned for this edition of Earthwatch.
The bell for freedom still rings. The bell for freedom still rings. Sorrow to me, but does it ring to know the bell of freedom still rings? The hammer for justice still pounds. The hammer for justice still pounds. Beating sound of the hammer for justice. 'cause he looks upon us with a frown. To know that millions of babies still starve, millions of babies still starve. We can't have the biggest heart if millions of babies still starve. And the innocent ones still die. The innocent ones still die. We can't value life too high if the innocent ones still die. When will the world stop enlisting? When will we all stop and see? He looks upon us with a frown. Light of truth we won't let shine. Light of truth we won't let shine. Tell me, has the world gone blind? Light of truth we won't let shine. Life is still a day, and I know that we can find our way. For as long as there's life, there's still a day.
Well, here we are again.
Whoa, yeah.
Ah, okay. Shakedown. You know, we're about to move from these studios to a new location, and pardon the transient malfunctions and our giddiness at going to a new home. This is WBAI New York. My name is Robert Knight. The program is Earthwatch, and I'm glad to be back home here, doggone it. And even better, to be rejoined by my long-term and yet-to-be, even longer-term, broadcast partner, Steve Cates, who graces us tonight after quite a long time, after a certain adventure that I had with the Skywatch report on Earthwatch and a roundup of the wonderful events in the cosmos. And I introduced Steve by sharing the fact that I learned a new astronomical word looking this week at the approach of the Moon to Jupiter in a maneuver that is known as an appulse. And Steve, take it away.
Well, good morning, Robert, and I'm so glad that you've recovered and back here in your traditional format here on WBAI to continue your tradition with Earthwatch. Humbled and honored to be part of the Skywatch segment, as many listeners may know, going on more than a generation. I think, what are we, about 27 years or so? And proud to be able to offer the insightful information that many of you tell us out that are so important in our daily lives about learning what's beyond terra firma, or maybe not so terra firma in these tough times. But Robert, good to hear your voice, and welcome back as we explore the universe from the environs of one of the largest cities, of course, in the world, as I'm sitting here in Phoenix, Arizona, reporting to my motherland back in the New York metro area. Well, folks, January, of course, well underway. As we move now, of course, to the 24th, we find ourselves looking for interesting objects, as always, in the nighttime sky and morning skies. We begin, Robert, as always, with the moon, naturally the Earth's nearest neighbor. The moon continuing to wax and grow, now beyond that of a gibbous moon, reaching its full phase on the 26th at exactly 11:38 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, welcoming in the full moon, the first full moon of, naturally, the new year, 2013. But the interesting term that you brought up before, appulse, is similar in many ways to that of a conjunction. But if Skywatchers had an opportunity, though it's past, to observe on the evening of the 21st, a most amazing sight in the New York skies, if your weather, of course, was clear, But here in Arizona, watching the event, a very close encounter between the moon, the then glowing waxing moon, as I mentioned before, and the beauty of the planet Jupiter. This, separated by less than a moon diameter in the sky, meaning that of about a half a degree in the sky, sky watchers in other parts of the world had what we call an even much, how do I say this in proper English, a much rarer event. Not just a conjunction or an appulse to close objects, meaning coming together, both Jupiter and the moon, but some of the observers had the chance to see something called an occultation, another interesting term in which the larger object, in this case the moon, eclipsed or covered up the mighty planet Jupiter. And these type of events, Robert, are pretty interesting. If you go back in the time that you were not on the air, and myself in kind, the planet Jupiter and the moon had been very close in the last 2 months, and sky watchers built up to this very big appulse conjunction that we experienced earlier in the week. But it's not over for sky watchers, Robert. Even though the moon washes out naturally most of the faint sky objects, we have many other things to take a look at. And let's go back in our minds, the mind's eye, as I should say, and look at the planet Jupiter. If you have a small telescope within the sound of my voice, take a look at this planet if you haven't done so by now. It's absolutely spectacular. Binoculars will show it. We started this program, as I mentioned, maybe some 27 years ago, and the main theme has always been observational astronomy. What can I see from the bright lit areas of the New York City area and the adjoining states? And there's so much, as you know, if you've followed us. But if you're a new listener, welcome. But with the planet Jupiter, even in a handheld pair of binoculars, you'll see what Galileo did as one of his discoveries back on January 7th of 1610, as we like to repeat it often, when he observed three of the satellites named in his honor for many of the great mistresses of Zeus, Io, Europa, Ganymede, and Callisto, and then again in the successive evening, observing the fourth of the satellites, Callisto. These objects make the most amazing dance as they continue to move left and right around this mighty planet. So if you're out there with binoculars and you have clear skies the next day or even now, looking high up into the sky at sunset, that is, looking high up into the east, that is where Jupiter is during the early evening, and then continuing all night long as the object moves and traverses naturally toward the western sky. But the telescopic view is absolutely spectacular. You'll get to see the object even with about 150 times the magnification of the human eye. The detail really steps it up, and you'll be able to see not only the cloud bands and zones on the planet Jupiter, but occasionally an interesting object we call the Great Red Spot. Many people have heard of it. Very few have seen it. In recent years, Robert, this red spot has been fading. It's a cyclonic storm that's been on Jupiter for as long as visual observers have been looking at the planet. Not discovered by Galileo. His small and crude telescope could show virtually no surface features on the planet Jupiter, but maybe about another 30 or 40 years later, an astronomer named Robert Hooke was observing the planet Jupiter, and he himself came upon this rather strange-looking eye, as they called it then, the eye of Jupiter, an object that changes in color over maybe 20 years or so, coming to many observers as brick red when they see it, also maybe a salmon pink, and then almost fading out to invisibility as the methane and ammonia concentration in the upper atmosphere of Jupiter changes. Interesting note that I'm sure many people know out there is Jupiter rotates so fast on its axis. How fast is that? About 9 hours and 55 minutes to make one complete so-called Jovian day if we go toward the equator. And it gets a little slower as we move up and away from the equatorial regions toward the poles. So Jupiter is the main object to see now in our evening sky. As we continue to sneak into February, though, we wind up seeing both the planet Mercury making its best appearance in the low southwestern part of the sky toward about the middle of next month, February. And also the planet Mars is still hanging on extremely low into the southwest. You'll really need clear skies to see it. And from the New York City area, maybe some of those high buildings or places that are not obstructed by trees or bright lights will help you in seeing the object. But Robert, things get really interesting in the morning sky now. If we start to look into the southeast by a few hours before dawn, we get to see the planet Saturn, which is a naked eye object and phenomenal in a telescope. I mean, the ring system is literally opening up. Every 15 years or so, we see the ring system kind of go edge on. The ring system is opening, so observers with telescopes in the morning sky looking for Saturn will see a beautiful sight. it comes to its opposition later this year in April, when we get to see it at its best, rising at sunset, and of course, in the sky all night. Venus, if you're a keen-eyed observer, very low into the southeastern part of the sky, moving closer into the sun. And as we move into the early months of 2013, you will see this planet transition from the morning and then back to the evening sky. But what I thought a special treat for the listeners here on the show is always a great opportunity to talk about visible objects, of course, the main theme. While you were gone and while I was gone, something interesting has happened. There are two major comets that we'd like to announce here on the program here on Earthwatch and WBAI. One of these particular comets, in my mind, according to astronomers, I should say, is probably one of the best comets to be visible later in 2013, starting sometime in late November. It's a comet officially known as ISON. The comet itself was discovered. It's a large observatory in Russia. This particular comet is called ISON, for the acronym of Russia's International Scientific Optical Network. The comet, in its generic vernacular, is known as Comet C, 2012-S1, that's the name of the comet officially, but the street name, as I like to call it, is simply ISON. Discovered by two Russian astronomers, Vitaly Nevsky and Artyom Novichanok, these two observers discovered this comet with a large CCD camera back on the evening hours of September the 21st. But here's what's really interesting, and I haven't heard too much about this in the mainstream media. They've kind of brushed on it, that we're supposed to see a great comet. Well, folks, if the astronomical calculations are correct, and I think they will be, you know, don't hang me out to dry on this, but it states that this particular comet now lying in the constellation of Gemini is all but invisible, you know, to telescopes, unless you had a large telescope with a CCD camera. But absolutely, this comet should turn into something quite spectacular as it moves now through Gemini in January, February, moving up into the area of the high northeastern part of Gemini in April, then rapidly swinging as it gets closer to the Earth. The comet should be something spectacular by about the end of November of this year, 2013. And astronomers are saying that this particular comet, now get a load of this, folks, and I'm not saying this incorrectly, may be as bright or brighter than the full moon. Now people all get excited and said, well, we remember back when Comet Kohoutek was the comet of the century and it fizzled and really wasn't anything spectacular. But here's what's going to happen. Perihelion, when the comet is closest to the sun, occurs on the evening date of November the 28th into the 29th of 2013. What's amazing about this, if the comet survives and continues to move through this very, very dangerous area as it gets close to the sun, it will be an incredible 680,000 miles away from the surface, the photosphere of the sun. Now remember, the sun's 865,000 miles across. So this is something within less than a complete diameter of the sun itself. Now, most of these comets that would come in from space are incinerated, obliterated. Astronomers are starting to rethink that whole theory because a few comets have come very close to the sun called Kretz comets. This is a whole class of comets that are called sun grazers. A lot of them just get incinerated as they move into the sun naturally. One of our comets, the simplest description as an icy, dirty snowball, remnants of the creation of the solar system out about many, many billions of miles beyond the orbit of the planet Pluto, this large Oort cloud that astronomers believe is surrounding not only our star, but stars like Beta Pictoris and a whole bunch of other stars. So if we're lucky, this is what's supposed to happen. We know the comet is heading to the direction of the sun. And I would say, folks, if all is well, that is, if the comet survives this close encounter with the sun, we should start to see this comet low into the evening sky as we move into the early days of December of 2013. And then that period from about December the 1st all the way up through about the new year, January 1st of 2014, this comet may be so spectacular. And what does so spectacular mean? It may have a tail, according to many who've been in the business a long time, that stretches 50 or 60 degrees across the sky, maybe more. And this comet could be simply brighter than anything we've ever seen. But according to some of the astronomers that go back into the study of comets in history, this may be a repeat of Comet C1680 V1, or simply the Great Comet of 1680. The orbits resemble themselves, and we may be in simply for a phenomenal show. And don't forget, another comet, which we really don't know what to say other than it's headed our way, is a comet called Pan-STARRS. And it should reach naked eye visibility sometime in March. We'll report here on Earthwatch with Skywatch here on WBAI to fill you in on some of the interesting things. Now, again, the comet that we're talking about is the comet called ISON. And again, not visible now unless you had a superior size telescope with a large CCD camera. Count me out, and I'm sure many of you. But the comet should even turn into maybe even naked eye visibility even before it gets to perihelion. So the best we could say about this is sometime in November, we can start peeling our eyes to the skies. And we're going to be doing some things, Robert, in the time that we were not speaking on the air. You know, I've hooked up with a few travel companies that are first class, world class. And we're going to be announcing some trips that we're headed to Costa Rica on some sailing ships to actually do some observations of the comet, some journeys to China to explore the great planetarium. So there's a whole lot of things happening. And I really do appreciate the opportunity here to talk about these objects and events in the sky. And in closing, finally, don't forget, if you go to sites like my own, the DrSky.com and many other great sites out there, SpaceWeather.com, but more importantly, to observe with regularity the Earth satellites. There's so many. And I know, Robert, in the days that we were doing this almost regularly, we would be watching together the Iridium satellites. We still do. The International Space Station, the Hubble Space Telescope, and a newcomer to the fleet that many observers think they can't see at all. But let me assure you, under fairly dark skies, even in the city of New York City, downtown, let's say, if you look between the buildings, you may even have a chance to see the Chinese space station, the evolution of one called Tiangong 1. I've witnessed it many times, even in brightly lit areas of Phoenix that are similar to that of the lighting on the East Coast. So many cool things, Robert. But most important, Robert, I'm glad to report that you're back and wish you the best of health and looking forward to a whole new 25 years or so as we continue to celebrate the milestone, but as you would say, I'm sure, a fleeting bit of time in the cosmic scale. But an honor to be with you and the listeners of WBAI. Thank you so much.
So proud to have you, Steve, and let me just take advantage of the moment, because earlier today I received and read the current number of the journal Science, in which there are three major reports on studies of the planet Mercury, and polar observations indicate that away from the sun on the Halley side of certain craters near the pole, where the shadow is strong enough that the temperature does not exceed about 100 degrees Kelvin, there is radar and neutron scattering that indicates the presence of water. We know that there is polar water on Mars and now Mercury. What does that tell us about our solar system?
We should really salute, Robert, the scientists from the MESSENGER spacecraft, because you're so correct. I mean, for the longest time, who would believe that in certain areas, and you're alluding to the fact of detecting, you know, water. I mean, it seems to be more prevalent in the solar system than not. You know, we start off now with your revelation and the astronomers' revelation of the potential for water on this planet that's either bathed in intense heat or deep in the frigid cold near that of absolute zero, the lunar surface, as we talk about the coldest places in the solar system. I was just baffled by this. I actually failed the test when someone asked me, what's the coldest place in the solar system? So I was referring to my, you know, and you and I both had the honor of speaking with Dr. Clyde Tombaugh, the discoverer of the then-known major planet Pluto. I always thought, gee, you know, way out there, it's got to be the coldest. But we find out that the moon, let's say at the southern polar cap, near the Shackleton craters, you know, may also possess not only the water ice, which we see, you know, on the imaging from the L-Cross, but simply probably even colder than that of areas that we thought were the coldest in the solar system. So water seems to be more prevalent. The Mercury, as we mentioned before, seeing it in the sky, it's a planet that even the great Copernicus, on his deathbed, when he wrote the De Revolutionibus, and it was revealed to the world that he was a true believer, that things that were like objects in space, not necessarily all went around the Earth as we know, but around the sun, it was stated, and he stated it very clearly. He never even had the opportunity to ever see the planet Mercury. So Skywatchers in the Newark area, wherever you're listening, folks, you can see this very simply, bright enough, by about the 15th through the 18th of February, low in the west, and like Robert mentioned, just an amazing planet. Another place in the solar system, Robert, that water seems to abound, even on the satellites of Saturn. Ice volcanoes, maybe on some of the satellites of Uranus and Neptune. Imagine seeing ice spewing from volcanoes. Just another of the amazing things that go bump in the night, don't you think?
It's an amazing place. I, too, would have missed the guess about the coldest place in the solar system, though, Steve.
Absolutely. It was a surprise to me. And I kind of scratched my head and said, you know, is that really accurate? But no, we did some fact-checking on that, and some other friends of mine that are, you know, very close to some of these scientific missions to the moon, you know, I talked to them, you know, off air, and yeah, it's a simple fact. The lunar surface, imagine that. Imagine going there, seeing perpetual darkness in the interior of this lunar crater at one of the poles, or the poles, southern pole particularly. And then as you climb higher, let's say if you could get up on the mountain edge or the edge of the rim of the crater, it's permanently bathed in sunlight. So you could do some serious scientific research if you wanted to use the power of the sun for your solar instruments to power up things, but you would still have the ability in the center of the crater to see darkness and ice. Imagine that. Just an unusual play on an amazing solar system.
Well, Steve, it is truly fulfilling and a great honor to travel through this universe with you, and we'll see you again much sooner than before.
Looking forward to it, and welcome back, and the best of health, and that to all the listeners of Earthwatch and there on WBAI. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
All right. This is Earthwatch, Steve Cates, drsky.com. My name's Robert Knight. This program is Earthwatch. A little reminder about what's going on at the station. We are soon to be moving from our Wall Street headquarters at 120 Wall Street. And accordingly, we are removing excess ballast. And that's a great opportunity for those of you who listen of an intellectual and cultural and artistic bent, because we're having a CD-DVD book sale for our moving out process. And it has been such a success that we're extending it for two more days because your minimal contributions to receive a great number of publications of tremendous value can be had simply by coming here to WBAI and perusing and getting. You might come by to salute us and loot us. So come on down to BAI, 10th floor, 120 Wall Street, through Friday afternoon, and including tomorrow, Thursday, or today, Thursday. And come on by to the book sale here at BAI, as well as the CD and DVD and other premium material sales at 120 Wall Street, 10th floor. And give us a call at, I think 212-209-2950 or 2900 just to get on the building entry list. And come join us because it's for a good cause. We are selling out.
So glad I caught you. I've got so much work for you. Now call me Dreadnought 7. 777.
Dreadnought 7.
Bitch. I'll see you later, Fido.
It's Dido.
Well, obviously, there are technical difficulties that are a result of the configuration here that has on our main studio computer console. Apparently, somebody has put in a new version of Windows or something that finds itself unable to properly play things. Let's see if we can get any continuity here. These things are to be expected during times of transition.
Bitch. I'll see you later, Fido.
It's Dido. Oh, nobody's wild about Harry. Are you ready for something a little more potent? Don't worry about it, Colin. Stay on here in the Land of Oz with the wizard and all those other creepy pals of yours, and you'll never need to know.
Who are you talking to?
I'm talking to you.
Don't buzz me.
What are you doing here?
Let's get legitimate.
Why don't you disappear?
How far are you going?
Hey, man, I'm going all the way. We'll never live this down, man.
I don't care what people say. If I become a swinging somebody, I'll get my creep, Susan. I'm selling out.
Me. I'm pulling out. Oh, you with me or without me?
Let's party.
Yeah. Right, go and check it. Why don't you push yourself forward? Give me some of that. Oh, all right. Who got you ready?
Hi, call me Connor.
He's researching a TV special. Do you know any authentic teenagers?
What are they? Teenagers are the new economic class. This is the age of a teenager. It's my aim, it's my mission in life to bring pop culture to the masses. Why don't you give me a ring? Me number Speedwell, what is me number, anyone?
Speedwell 8765.
Yes, that's it.
What he actually wants to know is, do you teenagers have an active sex life?
Well, do you?
None of your business, Knightsbridge girl.
Oh, I love anger. You know, you and I ought to argue sometime.
Good idea. You need a nose job, Harry.
We meet at last, Colin.
And there you go. That's a little sample from the soundtrack. One of the sweetest and most musically exquisite movies I've seen, called Absolute Beginners, starring David Bowie and directed by Julian Temple. This is Earthwatch on WBAI New York. My name is Robert Knight, and we're going to open up the phone lines for your thoughts, topics, comments, and subjects. The new temporary phone number for on-air phone calls is 917-580-6020. 917-580-6020. And you all were just so brilliant last week that you constructed a perfect program on my first return from certain medical adventures. And you should give yourselves a hand for being so bright last week. And we invite more such input from you, the listeners. Phone number 212-209-2900, and let us begin. You're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Robert. It's Randy in Woodstock.
Hey, Randy, how you doing?
Well, I've been better.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
I had the pleasure of calling you, I think, on your second to last show last year. And at the end of the show, I mean, at the end of the call, we had a very pleasant conversation. You said very outright twice that you loved me.
Yeah, and yeah. I remember you.
After,
sure.
After the Mayans' prediction didn't come true for anybody but me, it was sleeting up here, and I took a wicked fall, and I broke my ankle in two places and had other injuries. And in the emergency room, I was exposed to someone who had that bronchitis. That's my phone. Pardon me. Actually, I think it's a bad line in Woodstock. But at any rate, I was exposed to this bronchitis, and I got it. Still have a little bit of it left over. And a little bit after that, I got an abscessed molar. So I had all of this pain that even the prescribed opiates with all their depression was not able to overcome at times. And through all of that exquisite pain, not knowing what had happened to you other than that you had just disappeared, it was you saying that to me on the air was one of the major things that helped me get through all of that. And I just wanted to call the thing.
What a beautiful thought. I'm so sorry for your difficulties. And I can commiserate with the beauty, the dawn of recovery. And I hope that is proceeding apace for you.
Well, they say I'm not going to be walking around for at least another month. And after that, it's probably a walker and a brace. But at least I have you back to listen to. And I'm so glad that you're recuperated. And I was just, as you were telling your story last week, I was just aghast that would happen to a fellow traveler in a similar way. But I was in no condition to call last week. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, it's the first days and weeks out of such an incident that are both the most challenging and the most inspiring. And I think you can do that month standing on your head.
Yeah, well, you know, especially in weather like this where maybe you don't want to go out. It's much bit more bitterly cold up here than it is even down there. So if I were to go out, I'd probably get pneumonia on top of everything that I had. So I'm just staying.
Well, you're one of the constant lights in my sky, and it's always good to hear you.
Well, I love you too. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's amazing also how many other people have either fallen or had accidents or had this sickness or flu that's going around or whatever. So we always try to put out healing rhythms for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Well, I offer you this, and please understand the spirit. It is in the spirit of the celebration of one of the most beautiful rocking songs I've heard. It's a Motown classic. And it's not about our world's ending any more than the turning over of the Mayan odometer of the calendar. And, you know, I have adopted the attitude that every show I do is my second to last. So
well, I hope that's only figuratively for all of us.
Uh-huh. Well, in that spirit, here's a song of joy, and let your soul dance with this.
Thank you.
All right. This is
Love
Earthwatch.
You too. Bye-bye.
Phone number here is area code 917-580-6020.
But now it's nothing, nothing without you, baby.
Doggone it. What did they do to our computer here? This is a radio station. We need reliability. But the point is, our world did not end. And, the deepening of the joy of encounter when circumstance comes along to remind us how much we mean to each other. That is the point of trying to play on this toy operating system of a computer, a song that ultimately is musically therapeutic. We're going back to the phones at 917-580-6020. And this is Earthwatch, and you're on the air.
Robert, this is your buddy Michael.
Hey.
How you doing?
Good.
Hey, look, I have something. Well, first of all, I hope to run into you this weekend. But having said that, I have something that may be of interest to you. It's something I caught earlier on a radio show when I was trying to Google it over the internet, where they did a study in Britain and Canada, the correlation between IQ, racism, and conservative views.
I never shop at IQ. Never mind. You know, I like nice furniture, but I never shop at IQ.
Okay, you got me on that one. No, but I thought of it maybe as something that may be of interest.
It's an interesting thought, Michael. There is so much about politics in America that is pinned to instinctive memory, to collective oppression, and the insecurity of oppression. And I think perhaps the lines are drawn with a little bit too much specificity in terms of the false dichotomy between Democrats and Republicans, because there is no economic or class difference between the policies of the two so-called parties other than distracting us into believing that there is an alternative. Earlier today, on 5 o'clock Shadow, we spoke with Jared Ball about the falsity of Obama's pretense and bibliotheft in his lip-synced oath of office on the Bibles of Abraham Lincoln. And I'm surprised that there was not a lightning strike when he touched the Bible of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And we are given false choices, and those false choices funnel us into the continuing accumulation of wealth and the global oppression of empire, which is a necessary thing. The state of the economy is inseparable from the maintenance of the U.S. military, and Obama failed to allow a natural boon to the economy, the expiration of the 2013 discretionary Pentagon military budget for wars of choice in the Middle East and elsewhere. That would have taken away the better part of $1 billion from the federal deficit. But we're given a reactionary view on Fox and a reactionary view on MSNBC with the cheerleading for Obama, which I believe is racist. I believe that an automatic response based on skin color rather than a rigorous analysis of policy is racism. Whether the behavior that follows from that racism is to hurt a person of color or to falsely elevate a person of color who hurts people of color. Just something to think about. Thanks for calling, Michael. We got some other calls. This is Earthwatch, and maybe you'll help me with that dilemma. You're on the air.
Robert.
Hey.
Robert, do you know that there was a book of poetry back in the 60s, Fly, you know, those men that stand in the water and catch with a big, big swing. Well, it's poetic for what you are. People did shudder when he mentioned that Bible and putting his hand on it. Believe me, there were shudders all over the globe. a lot of people didn't like the idea.
Well, you know what Obama was thinking when he touched that Bible? When he touched Martin Luther King's Bible, he said, it burns!
Aaron, because let me tell you, this one thing that you were telling that lady about not ever getting caught, or that Irish expression, 20 minutes or a half hour before you died, the devil found out too late. So a person like you ain't never going to get caught by the devil. And when you fly catch, it's when you can swing that, what you call pole,
yeah,
so far out.
Mm-hmm.
That's you, darling.
The lure.
When I tuned into the fellow you had on, I said, there he goes. He caught it way out. So that's what you are, my dear. You are one of those that can fly, squat way out there, and you caught up for everybody else that was way behind.
Well,
get it?
All traveling together, I'm just an anomaly on the bell curve.
No, you're not an anomaly. You know why? Because all those years, Monroe, that used to drive us crazy, always said we had to get you back. Now I miss him terribly. But he always mentioned your name, you know. We couldn't live without you. When they shut you off, the whole thing was dead, as far as I'm concerned, until you got back. So there. Mm. However little you are, you're very important.
Well,
to me and a whole lot of other people.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you, thank you, thank you. This is Earthwatch, and the phone number is 917-580-6020, 917-580-6020. And you're on the air.
Hi, good evening, Robert.
Whoa, Justin, yeah.
Justin here in Upper Manhattan. Nice to have you back among the quick.
yeah.
I just want to recommend to you and your and the BAI listenership two wonderful audiobooks that can be accessed on YouTube in a channel of audiobooks of various kinds. Both are somewhat unusual for their authors. One is a book titled Anne Veronica by H.G. Wells. And it has nothing to do with Martians invading Earth, but a coming of age of a young suburban woman in circa 1910. I don't know that I would call it the first feminist book, but there's certainly a lot in it of that sort.
I would have thought of Frankenstein, Mary Shelley.
As a feminist book?
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Well, perhaps, yes. I suppose one could put that spin on the subtext. Perhaps I might say it's the first book by a male author that I know of that might be called feminist.
Ah, that's very important. Go ahead.
And secondly is the novel by Charles Dickens called Our Mutual Friend, which is a wonderful, wonderful reading by a wonderful voice actress who does what apparently Charles Dickens did toward the end of his career, which is to give dramatic readings of his novels, that is, taking on the characters. And this female reader does a wonderful job with a consistent voice for a whole circus full of Dickensian characters. And I will leave it at that.
Well, we are properly apprised. Thank you.
All right.
This is Earthwatch.
Enjoy being here.
Yeah, nice to hear your voice. And the number is 212-20. Doggone it. Memory malfunction, doctor, memory. 917-580-6020 is the number, and you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Robert.
Hey.
This is Susan from Brooklyn. And I just want to know if you know anything about what's going on with the solar flare.
Oh, yeah. There was a big double sunspot that recently moved across the sun from east to west. The way it works, you know, the sun is spinning Once every 28 days. Yes, it is. And every 28 days, the same periodicity as the moon. The sun rotates in the same direction as everything else, mostly in the solar system. And so what happens is that a sunspot will appear on the eastern edge of the sun, and over the course of a week or two, will slowly transit day by day from left to right as you look at the sun.
Because didn't it fire off last Thursday?
What? There was a, let's see, there was a coronal hole near the southern hemisphere of the sun that erupted in several places. I'm not sure the effect that it had on the terrestrial magnetosphere or whether there were magnetic storms or not, but I do remember hearing of such a thing. But what here's the beautiful thing. In 1957, an astrophysicist named Parker described the garden hose effect of the sun. You know, the sun is always blowing stuff out, electrons, protons, neutrons, alpha particles. And these things shoot out from the sun all the way to the heliopause, all the way at the edge of the solar system. But because the sun is spinning, remember, every 28 days, it's sort of like if you put the end of a hose on a spinning merry-go-round, the way the water would go out would be in a spiral. And so the movement of the Earth relative to the sun means that the sunspots do not have their shotgun aimed at Earth until they get to the right side or the western edge of the sun. And that's when, you know, the sun basically is taking a bead, taking a lead on the particles it's shooting out. And the Earth catches up and walks into it. And the effect is that the halos of the north and southern poles, the aurora, they're called, sometimes travel very far south. And so that's what happens with the sunspots. I'm not aware of a major sunspot group that is able to reach the Earth at this point in time, but I usually check it every couple of days.
But Gary Knowles has been, you know, talking about this for at least a year and maybe longer. And what I've heard is that we had a solar flare like last September, sometime last fall, that it was the trajectory of that one was away from the Earth. And so I'm really interested. This is the first time I've heard somebody talk about, you know, the spiraling trajectory. So that would be more mathematically complicated to forecast. And I wonder if, anyway, but this time the solar flare that fired off last Thursday supposedly is coming towards the Earth, and I don't.
That could be.
I'm wondering, like, how much time does it take for you know?
Okay, there's two things.
And there have been, you know, really serious warnings about if this is the big one, you know, like the last big one happened in the 1800s.
Yeah.
But if, you know, the grid goes out, we could have real problems.
Okay, there are two things that can happen. One of them is the emission of photons, and these are called flares, and the most significant one is called an X-ray flare, and X-rays are photons with very big energy, and the distance from Earth to Sun is about as far as it takes light to travel within about 8 minutes or so. So if there's an X-ray flare, we get the effects of that almost immediately.
Oh, so we don't have to wait days. So it's already, whatever the potential hazard was, we're already out of that.
If it was a flare or an X-ray flare, and they have different categories of that. But the other thing that happens is the emission not just of light, but also of physical particles, namely the alpha particles of a flare of a sunspot eruption, you know, when the magnetic fields break and like a rubber band, it shoots it out and it eventually arrives at Earth. That takes about 4 days for it to arrive at Earth. So I'm not sure which one we're referring to.
That's the 4 day point, too.
But I since you mention it, I want to give Gary Knoll a lot of credit, not only on a personal level during my recent crisis, with a very generous offer of assistance with the expertise that he has in the health field, but also of his pioneering reporting. I was actually his guest at WABC some years ago when we were both covering the Contra cocaine connection. And his work on the sun, his work on sunspots and the already demonstrated fact that a sufficient surge can take out power grids and networks. He's completely correct to be concerned about that.
Well, thank you so much for enlightening me. I feel a lot less worried now.
Yeah. Well, we'll make it. The Earth has a good skin, a good magnetic cocoon that usually protects us.
Oh, because that's the other thing I've heard is that, you know, the compromised ozone layer makes us more vulnerable to this kind of activity.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, I'm more concerned about the drilling from below than the rain from above.
Well, what is Arnie, is it Gunderson?
Gunderson, yes, yes.
What does he have to say about it, about solar flare?
Just spoke with him the other day. I'll ask him next time.
Okay, love you, Robert.
You too.
Thank you.
You know, you people are so good, and I've received so many expressions of love for my close call about this manifestation of whatever it is my being is. And I just want to tell you that your concern and love was part of what helped bring me back and keep me focused. And in return, I do not take that lightly. So I guess I'm stuck here for a while. We'll be back with more phone calls at 917-580-6020. This is Earthwatch, and this is for you and everybody who cares about anybody else.
If ever I would leave you, it wouldn't be in summer. Seeing you in summer, I never would go. Your hair streaked with sunlight, your arms red as flame, your face with a luster that puts cold to shame. And if I'd ever leave you, it couldn't be in autumn. Just how I'd leave in autumn, I never, never would know. I've seen how you sparkle when running merrily, merrily, merrily through the snow. Or on a wintry evening, when you catch the fire's glow, if ever I it wouldn't be in springtime, knowing how in springtime
afar. If ever I would leave you, at all.
And here we are. This is Earthwatch. I'm Robert Knight. Phone number 917-580-6020. And you are... Whoa! We have a delay on Ye of Little Faith. Call back again. 917-580-6020 is the number here. And an open, free-form session tonight. And one of getting to re-know you. And let us proceed. You're on the air. Hello?
Hello?
Hello.
Is this WBAI?
This is Earthwatch. I'm Robert Knight.
Hi, how are you?
Okay. You're on the air. You're on the air.
No, I'm not.
Yes, you are. Who are you going to believe, me or your lying radio?
Oh, my God, I didn't listen to the radio. I am on the air.
Yeah, just talk to your phone.
Say that again? Sorry.
Just talk to your phone. Ignore the radio. Talk into your telephone.
Okay. Anyways, this guy called and he said, who's the guy who's on now? I don't know his name because I'm not usually up at this time.
I'm that guy. You're on with him.
What's your name?
Robert Knight.
Robert Knight. All right. This guy called and he said that you were really good and great to have you back. I want you to know that every single one of you are great. Every single one of you. I listen to this program all the time and I turned all my friends onto it. And we all pledged. We were really big pledges. And especially Gary Noel, because I have a friend who's very into health and all of that. And he was like, oh my God. He's like, this is amazing. What I'm hearing.
That's great. I mean, we're just reflections of you.
Sorry, say it again. I couldn't hear you.
You help make us who we are.
And you help make us who we are too. He was like this. My friend was like he was like this. So informative, educational. I told him, follow him in your car and all that. You know, he was just like. I'm not going to say my name because I don't want my name to be known, but I pledged. But when Michael called in, was that Michael Sargent?
No, different Michael.
Oh, okay. Anyways, I called Michael Sargent one night because he was hysterical. He made me crack up laughing when I was in the worst depressed mood I could ever be in. And he was just like, okay, your good name is going to be, every time you call me, it's going to be Cisco. I'm like, okay, whatever. It doesn't matter because, you know, I'm not using my real name. But I just want to let you guys know that I didn't know this program was on for so long, but you know what happened to me, Robert, is that I couldn't afford to pay cable anymore. So I listened to the radio. I'm switching around. Then I found this station. I'm like, this is unbelievable. And I was like...
Well, I hope actually that we're credible.
Say it again?
I hope that we're not unbelievable. I hope we're credible.
No, it was incredible. I said incredible.
Yeah.
It was
yeah.
Unbelievable, incredible, because you say the truth. You see everything like it was. Then I was listening earlier to the program where they have lobotomies for people who are homosexual. I'm not. But that's the precise point.
Wow.
But how could they do this to people without their knowledge and just let it go like that? And nobody's around to help them. Nobody's around to stop it.
Mm. Yeah, that's
you know what I'm saying?
Shame.
Like, let's say, Robert, let's say somebody found something wrong with me. All of a sudden, they're going to give me a lobotomy?
Hmm. Well...
You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. how does this work? I don't even get that. And then the prescription drugs, I don't take any drugs. I don't take anything. In fact, in my building, it's like smells like pot all the time, and I can't stand that. It smells like skunk to me.
Not that we would know.
You're very funny, Robert. No, but seriously, I mean, how could people just get away with doing stuff to other people? And then I was hearing these people calling in that they had.
How can people be so heartless? It's easy to be hard.
I'm sorry, Robert, I can't hear you.
Flashing back to Hair, how can people be so heartless? Easy to be hard.
How can people be what?
So heartless.
I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
So heartless as to conduct lobotomies on people whose behavior they fear.
Exactly, and I'm thinking, like, these people had no help. There was nobody around to say, stop, don't do it, don't do it. And there's prescription drugs, and they were talking about, like, some mental in-laws, they were putting them on all these drugs that make them their brain dead. I couldn't believe what I was hearing.
When I want to be drugged and brain dead, I watch the corporate news media.
Okay, go ahead.
Now, I'm listening. Now, most of the news we get is designed to lobotomize us.
To what?
Is designed to make us stupid. CBS, ABC, NBC, CNN, all of them are designed to make us stupid. But I'm glad that you have survived it.
No. I was never on drugs. I was never on.
No. I don't mean drugs. I mean media.
No prescription drugs either. Mm-hmm. But I'm listening to what happened to you and to everybody else. I'm just like, how could this society let this happen? You know what I'm saying?
Well, it's up to each of us to stand up for justice at every moment. And I thank you for sharing that tonight.
Well, no, I appreciate you for sharing everything you guys always do every day, 24/7. And I listen to everything. And that's why I said I tell my friends onto this. And they're like, oh, my God. I didn't know this. I didn't know that.
You know what? I got to move to the next call. But you just gave me an idea for a new motto for WBAI. You ready for it? A new motto for WBAI, because BAI does over and above, beyond the call of duty, right?
Yes.
So here's the new motto. WBAI, we're with you, 25/8. This is Earthwatch. The number is 917-580-6020, and you are on the air.
How are you?
Good.
Okay, I have, I need to know something. Who was this singer who was singing the song that you played?
Oh, the great bebop artist, Slim Gaylord.
Okay, I suggest you go and find Aretha Franklin when she was still on Atlantic.
Well, I just played her. This was my my promise to the listeners. If ever I would leave you, it wouldn't be an autumn, etc.
But that wasn't Aretha, right?
Yes, it was Aretha Franklin.
When was it? It just doesn't.
Just
sound
a few
like
minutes ago, girl.
No. I mean, I was sitting here and I kept going, that sounds like Aretha, but not the one that I have.
Yeah, it is.
On the album that I have.
I have that embedded in grooves upon my brain. That was it.
Okay, well, I have to give you a new name then.
Uh-oh, what's that?
Obi-Wan, you know it.
Oh, I am. it means nothing without you.
You know? It does. You know it. You know? We already got Obi-Wan Kenobi. Now we got Obi-Wan, you know it.
Yeah, it had the Arif, I believe it was Arif Martin, or let's see, maybe it was her producer who went on to form his own company. But the sweet violins in the introduction, that was Aretha.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that is like, when I would play that, it was like, I was transported to another world almost. It was so fabulous.
Yeah, sort of like
you
this,
know?
Huh?
What do you think about Beyonce lip syncing?
You know, I'm more troubled by Obama's lip syncing.
Oh, yeah, well, I know that. But, I mean, it's like she has supposedly a gift here. What's going on? Aretha got up there and did it. Whitney did it. You know, I mean.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know.
Whitney, you know.
It's like the asteroid belt. There's a jive belt among certain contemporary artists, and after a certain amount of money, they get jive.
You know, it was funny because there was a record producer who about 3 weeks ago had made a statement that I said, whoa, that's pretty sharp. And he said that he was talking about the young divas, Jordan Sparks and the other gal who won the Grammy and won the Oscar. I forget her name, believe it or not. And he was saying they want anything but divas. They, none of them can sing. And he went on. He threw Beyonce in there, too. And I was going, whoa, that's really harsh now, you know. But he's, you know, he's really good at what he does.
Well, you know, I'll give her credit for Put a Ring on It. That was a fine song and video. But really, you know, the latest we've heard about that is that that she showed up late. She showed up late. And the one thing that I learned about show business when I was working with Melvin Van Peebles on Broadway and with stage managers and stuff is you be on time. And she wasn't. Neither on stage nor beforehand. But I got to run.
Okay.
Keep listening on your radio. I'm going to give you a little
Obi-Wan,
bit of this
you know
to
what?
Prove my point.
Obi-Wan, you know what you got it. Bye.
Okay, enjoy this.
Or would I leave you running merrily, merrily, merrily through the snow? Or on a wintry evening, when you catch the fire's glow, if ever I would need you, it wouldn't be in springtime. Knowing how in springtime I'm bewitched, bewitched, bewitched by you. So if ever I would leave, leave you, at all.
Yeah, a moment worth reprise. Aretha Franklin, if ever I would leave you. This is Earth Watch. I'm Robert Knight. And we have time for just a few more calls here at 917-580-6020. One of you is calling on what is indicated here as a bad line. And if I punch it, we'd hear tickety-tackety. So whoever is calling right now, please call back and get a different line coming in. And in the meantime, you are on the air.
Oh, Robert.
Yes.
Oh, Robert Knight of the Round Table?
Ah, yes, yes, of the...
Robert Knight of the Light?
I am so dubbed. but remember, I'm merely a knight, not a king.
Well, listen, we're all at the table. That's what I like about your show. Listen, did you hear Aretha Franklin with Tony Bennett on the duets?
Oh, my God.
The music playing?
No, I don't think I have, but that must be exquisite.
Yeah, it was on PBS. It's repeated twice. It's one of those really magical moments. You even see it's one of the last songs. It's one of the last ones.
Wow.
You'll see him tearing up. And even she said that was one of those magical moments.
That's the difference between people of that echelon and the new divas. And many of them are very talented. But, you know, the jive of the bling and the swagger jack. has had a deleterious effect on so many artists that here's another thing I learned on Broadway. You maintain the instrument.
Yeah, well, it's quality's always been a rare situation, any field. Listen, so we Grandpa has gone on the other side, Pepsi Charles, I think.
Pepsi Charles was my midwife in entry to WBAI.
Pepsi, I remember. She
had a dear friend.
Beautiful soul.
Yeah.
Was it Marjorie or Carletta Joy? Steve Ben Israel, Monroe, with that interview with Ralph Nader that Kathy Davis put on was beautiful. You know, Fred Kuhn, you know, Moogie.
Yeah.
You know, John. It was John from The Tree of Life that had the show there for a while. Remember
that's right.
Tanya, The Tree of Life. So I am happy that you are back because we had to get a few our way that stay around. And I'm really happy. And I just want to say, Robert, I was at the station last week. I got to see you again at the book fair. And I didn't know what happened to you. I knew you were gone. I was hoping you were on vacation somewhere. And when I saw you, though, without knowing anything, I have to say, you looked really radiant, and you really, I hadn't, to be honest, maybe you mentioned you lost about 40 pounds, but you looked really good. So may this stay with you, and you carry on and keep that light there in the round table, and I'm glad we still have you. So
well,
keep accepting those blessings.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Okay. Ciao.
Okay. One more. Hello, you're on the air.
Hey, Mr. Knight.
Mister.
How you doing?
Okay.
Oh, what I want to ask you is how do you, in 2013, how do you see the world now? Because just for myself, I see like a unveiling of a lot of stuff. You know, like a lot of stuff is flying up and a lot of debris, but underneath it seems like some kind of clarity and unveiling of a lot of stuff is happening. Do you feel that?
I wish there were more of it. There has been a decade of sleepwalking with the movement.
Underneath that you can really feel it like bubbling up. It might take another 5 years for it to like really, really like, you know, really be seen a lot by a lot of people. But I feel it. And I was just asking you, you know, if you did. And then what would you like to see? Right quick, how would the world look a little bit in the next 5 years in your head, in your eyes?
Martin is my guide.
Okay.
Martin is my guide. I think he said it, content of character over color of skin.
Okay, and that's
and the evil triplets of racism, war, and economic disparity.
Right.
That's good enough for me.
Okay, so much love and peace to you. Glad you're on the planet.
Thank you. Glad you're here with us. And I'd like to give praise to a true artist in the person of someone who really personed up on the partying and performance on the night before the fake inauguration on Monday. And that is Lupe Fiasco. They hustled him off stage because in his song he was saying that something ain't right in the milk about Barack Obama. And this is a song that he was performing before being untimely ripped from the stage. So a salute to one of the bright brothers of the new musical generation, Lupe Fiasco. Words I Never Said.
Full clip, 9/11 building 7, did they really pull it? and a bunch of other cover-ups. Your child's future was the first to go with budget cuts. If you think that hurts, then wait, here comes the uppercut. The school was garbage in the first place. That's on the up and up. Keep you at the bottom, but tease you with the upper crust. You get it, then they move it, so you never keeping up enough. If you turn on TV, all you see is a bunch of what the f- dudes dating so-and-so, blabbering about such and such, and that ain't Jersey Shore. Homie, that's the news, and these the same people supposedly telling us the truth. Limbaugh is a racist, Glenn Beck is a racist. Gaza Strip was getting bombed, Obama didn't say. That's why I ain't vote for next one either. I'm a part of the problem, my problem is I'm peaceful. And I believe in the people. Yeah!
It's a lie.
Never heard it, but if we know better, then we probably deserve it. Jihad is not holy war, where's that in the worship? Murdering is not Islam, and you are not observant. And you are not a Muslim. Israel, don't take my side, cause look how far you've pushed them. Walk with me into the ghetto, this where all the went. Complain about the liquor store, but what you drinking liquor for? Complain about the gloom, but when you pick a broom up? Just listen in the pot, ain't gonna make it stop. A rebel in your doubts, ain't gonna make it out. If you don't become an actor, you'll never be a factor. Pills with million side effects, take them when the pain's felt. Wash them down with diet so they're killing off your brain cells. Crooked banks around the world, we're glad to give a loan today. So if you ever miss a payment, they can take your home away.
Yeah, words they wouldn't let him say at that Obama event preceding the fake inauguration. This is Earthwatch, and that's a shout-out, a salute to a creative producer of the new generation, Lupe Fiasco, who personed up on stage at one of the abominable events preceding the lip-synced oath of office. And that pretty much concludes tonight's edition of Earthwatch. We welcome your emails to Robert Knight, that is R-K-N-I-G-H-T, R-K-N-I-G-H-T at WBAI.org. And you all have been and continue to be an inspiration and one of the magnets for my sojourn on Earth. And I hope we all stay here, live well, and see better days as we move along. You are so smart and so important. Thank you for listening to Earthwatch. Stay tuned. Coming up, Hour of the Wolf with Jim Freund. Right after this moment of mutual celebration.
You surely.
Gone too soon. Ain't that the story? Well, I guess the digitized element of BAI has simply given up the ghost. But I haven't.
I could see, girl, just knowing you're
about you. Honey, I couldn't live without you.
Guten Morgen. This is Hour of the Wolf, a weekly program dedicated to science fiction, fantasy, enchantment, and the imagination. My name is Jim Freund. Planned out for absolute hours now. Our guest this morning, despite the haste, is one of the best, Keith DeCandido. Stay tuned. Let's see. Announcements. Do I have any announcements? I suppose so. A brief one. But not good until, you can't redeem it until February 5th. But on February 5th, Tuesday, will be the regular New York Review of Science Fiction Readings reading. And our readers will be Sarah McCary, with whose work I am not familiar. She writes short fiction. And some of that is available on her blog. If you Google up Sarah McCarry, that's M-C-C-A-R-R-Y, you can read some of her short stories, and they're very cool. But that's irrelevant to the fact that she has a novel coming out shortly. And then one of our former curators, Paul Witkover, will be the other reader. So a good time will be had by all who show up, and that should include, well, everybody within the listening radius of my voice, which carries about 100-mile radius. So, you know, we'll be able to accommodate you at 138 Sullivan Street at the Soho Gallery for digital art. So that's February 5th, and I'll give you much more information about that next week if they still allow me on the air after this week. So speaking of that song, a person, how many... okay, let me, which is, this should be your microphone. Say hi, Keith.
Hi, Keith.
Oh, good. Okay. I knew you were going to do that somehow.
I'm getting predictable in my old age.
Keith has been on this, has done more than one reading that he's shown up for at the, you had car trouble last time.
Yes, I did.
And it was the strangest thing. And we actually ended up doing, for the first time, open mic. And it turned out to be great.
Yeah. You may want to try that again sometime.
Yeah, well, actually,
ideally, yes. Without car trouble this time.
Yeah, I know. I'm seriously thinking about it, of inviting people in advance. No, don't write me, just, you know. Be there and open mic night, and Ordover will love it.
Oh, yeah.
He goes for that kind of thing. He really does.
Yes.
Anything that's crazy.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, this is a guy who hired me to write for him, so obviously he believes in doing the insane.
Yeah, and at one point, you know, I asked him if he wanted to do the show tonight. I asked him as recently as yesterday, and the answer with him is, oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
You know, can I mention bacon? You know, yes. and
yes, because he would want to talk about bacon paloozas.
Yeah, it's not bacon; it's bacon strips.
meat candy, I like to call it.
Yeah. What? March.
March 1st, 2nd, and 3rd.
March 1st, 2nd, and 3rd.
Yes.
Right.
I will actually be there helping out with the bacon palooza, which will be a weekend of bacony goodness.
Yeah, and I'll actually be there as well, just shouting "Trafe, Trafe!" And I know, and I suspect Margot Adler will be there.
Yes, she was there last time.
So. Oh, she has, you know, I expected her to, like, you know, say how absurd, how ridiculous, only to find out that she was, like, you know, the number one bacon lover in the place.
Yes.
And that
was against some stiff competition. We had some good bacon people.
She's really into the stuff.
Yes.
I like it. But I'm also very fat at this point. So it's a guilty pleasure. So
but yes, the same location as the Nurse of Readings that Jim was just talking about will be Bacon Palooza March 1st, 2nd, and 3rd.
Yeah, and it's a benefit, by the way.
Yes, it is.
They do charge money. The reading series I do is free with requested donation, but Bacon Palooza actually has a fee associated, but it's for autistic children schools, I believe.
Yes.
So it's actually all for a good cause, although I find the irony, given that the autistic children's schools are mostly Orthodox Jewish.
Yes, well.
But, and bacon is not what they serve.
I would think not, no. But all the more reason to come and enjoy it there. There will also be a merchandise table, I know, because I'm the one who's going to be running it, selling various bacon-related items, ranging from food to literature to jewelry to accessories.
And there'll be very good science fiction being read.
Yes.
Carlos Hernandez and, who's the other person that John booked for that night?
I don't remember.
Yeah.
I'll be there, too, because I'll already be there.
Then March 6th, which is a Friday, will be the next New York Review of Science Fiction Readings. And
on a Friday?
No, a Wednesday.
Wednesday.
Because he booked the Tuesday.
Got it.
So, but this time he gave me notice.
That was nice of him.
It was... A first, but no, it was a second.
Yeah.
But and we have for that the great and wonderful. Can you finish it?
No, because I don't know who you're talking about.
Well, March of 2013,
okay,
would be the 100th anniversary. The great and mighty, wonderful Wizard of Oz.
Ah, okay.
And, of course, John Joseph Adams has an anthology. Of course he does. Yes. Of course he does. And so we are going to have Ken Liu, which is not to rhyme, but a coup. he's won more awards for short stories in the last 5 years than a lot of people. He's actually given Swanwick a run for his, you know, 2 cents a word. And Robin Wasserman.
Ah, cool.
So two really cool writers, and Douglas Cohen will co-host. And what I'm trying to do is use one of the screens, screen 11, for those who really know the intimate details of the gallery, and Skype in John Joseph Adams from California.
Oh, that would be cool.
And yes, just do his head, this disembodied head, right, as the wizard.
Ah, I see.
That's my idea, but it's a surprise, so don't tell anybody.
As you just broadcast it over the air.
Oh, damn.
Yeah.
I haven't even told John yet. Well, he understands the idea of Skyping it in.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But John wanted to put the big projector out. And it's like, no, we have readers.
Yeah.
Let's get it onto a screen.
Right.
Oh, but those screens, you have to put a laptop on it. Well, will a tablet do? I suppose so. Fine.
Yeah.
It's very simple. My tablet has a little output thing, you know,
there
and
you
it
go.
Goes into there and fine.
Zips
you know.
Up.
Kim and I will do a dry run.
Right.
And, you know, we'll have the Mighty Oz on hand.
And John kind of looks like that, so yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So those are the only announcements of anything coming up the next. Why do I think that's John? Okay, I'm going to have to take a chance. Hi, you're on the air. Hello. Hi.
Hi.
You're not John, thank God.
Who is this?
This is Jim Freund. Who are you?
Oh, I wasn't trying to. I was just trying to find out where to send a small donation. I wasn't trying to be on the air.
Okay.
I wanted the address to where to send a small donation to WBAI.
The easiest thing to do probably is to go to WBAI.org.
I don't have a computer.
Okay.
But I mail them in all the time.
Do
you have a mailing address?
You know, it's changing is the problem. It's usually Post Office Box 12345, Church Street Station, and I forget.
PVPO Box 12345.
Yeah, but Church Street